Welcome to the Life Over Coffee podcast, conversations for transformation.
Too often, discussions about modesty digress into contentious sparring matches between Christians with differing perspectives on this secondary issue. I am not talking about you. I'm talking about them out there. You know those people. All you have to do is just mention the word modesty and the sparring ensues. Usually it's the legalist and the liberal thinking believer. It's a sad commentary about our Christian maturity in light of the horrendous things that are happening all around us. I mean, we can be like kids arguing over the bigger piece of candy when these privileges of sugar fixes are less common in many other parts of the world, where having anything to eat is a daily struggle. We can so easily lose the plot when we think about something as simplistic as modesty. In a culture like ours, where we have been spoiled for so long, sometimes I think we just have to create problems so that we can fuss at each other. And the tendency is to devolve into less weighty matters. It speaks to how easily our hearts curve into themselves. Paul told us, and you can apply this to modesty, in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. Wearing clothes is an everyday experience, and how we think about the apparel that we wear is a biblically and culturally relevant issue. And we know that intuitively. But we really know it in light of our call to spread the fame of God to a fallen world. And as we look out across the cultural landscape, we see that our world has devolved into such sexual, degrading ways that we could just never imagine the way things are now. And this is our call to glorify God. And what that means to glorify God, I mean, simply you could say it this way, it means to spread His fame throughout the world by making His name fabulously great within our sphere of influence. Oh, maybe you're not going to wrap the globe and speak in such a powerful way to so many people, but you do have a sphere of influence. Paul might say, whether you eat or drink or wear clothes, God calls all of us to do those things for His glory. We should have a magnification of the Lord focus in our mind, which is an all-encompassing command that even brings our clothing choices under the rubric of spreading God's fame. David talked about it this way in Psalm 34. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. Perhaps that's the way that you can enter into a modesty discussion with a friend. Hold their hand and say, oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt His name together. We're like a modern day John the Baptist, the guy who stood in the wilderness pointing people to Christ. His job description is ours too. The life we live is an ongoing process of learning how to decrease while intentionally increasing the person and the work of Christ so that others can hear and respond to the message of the gospel. When thinking about the clothes that we wear, the most appropriate place to begin always is in our hearts, specifically with our motivations. Maybe as I enter into this, a few questions might assist us in aligning our thoughts about clothing and motivation. How would you answer these questions? Number one, are you aware of how your motives influence what you wear? I mean, I assume you know that, but I don't want to assume. And so I'm asking the question, how does your motives, I mean, you know that your motives influence what you wear. Number two, you could ask the question in reverse. How do your clothing choices reflect your motives? Remember what Jesus said, by their fruit you shall know them. And so whether you look at the fruit from that direction, it reveals the heart motivation. Or what about your heart motivation? It will manifest in the fruit, or in this context, the clothing that you wear. Number three, what do your clothes say about you as a person? What do your clothes say about your relationship with God? And then finally, number five, do you crave affection, love, acceptance? And you use your clothes as a means to gain those things? Christians are missionaries. I'm a missionary, so are you, assuming that you are a Christian. And if you are a Christian, you are an alien living in a foreign land, living on foreign soil, for the purpose of convincing earthlings to worship your king. The practical way that we live our life matters as much as the message that we communicate. This is how Peter talked about it in 1 Peter chapter 2. He says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." Christians are influencing their culture for Christ, or the culture is affecting them for Satan. Our clothing choices are one practical way that we can discern if we are influencing them or if they are influencing us. Our clothes are messages that either work in tandem with the message of the gospel or work in conjunction with the ways of the world. Clothes are not neutral garments hanging on the Christian missionary. Regrettably, this tension about our clothes creates modesty wars within the Christian community. This is how I led. This is what we tend to do. We tend to fight rather than having constructive conversations about this all-important and relevant issue. There are several factions in these modesty wars. And for the next few minutes, what I have done is I've separated them into two general camps. Two general groups. I'm going to call them the conservatives or the legalists. And then the other camp or group are the non-conservatives, liberals. I don't mean anything derogatory about those labels. It's just a matter of putting them in two different camps and two different groups. And I'm sure that most everybody that's listening to this understands the words conservatives or legalists, non-conservatives or liberals. My conservative friends clearly see the dangers of dressing sensually. They get it. They understand. They are not blind, and I do not disagree with them. I see what they see. I know how they see because I used to be in that camp. Calling them legalistic while entirely dismissing their perspective is myopic and immature. My legalistic friends are like the rest of us in that they have problems too. But when it comes to clothing choices, they are typically more clear-headed than the non-conservative Christian community, what I'm calling the liberals. The conservative Christian community, they know that sex sells, and they are soberly aware of how so many of their brothers and sisters are promoting the sensual agenda of our culture. As a counselor, I've had the opportunity to see their complaint in a clearer way than most people. Sensual thinking and attire are nearly always associated with adultery, porn, and many other marital problems, including divorce. What our conservative friends are observing in our culture is a serious matter that is unarguable. Adultery, porn, divorce, they are not isolated behavioral events that have no relation to a person's heart motivations or their lifestyle choices. Nobody falls into adultery. No one makes an out-of-the-blue decision to live a lifestyle of porn. There is always a long trail that leads to these patterns. You'll always find an on-ramp that leads to adultery or pornography. And the trailhead is always in the sensual person's heart. With every sensual family problem that I have dealt with, there were sensual patterns of the heart that were in place long before anyone knew anything about the person's sinful lifestyle. It's a long runway, a long trail. My conservative friends are correct in their observations. If they do err in any way, it tends to be an overreactive response to the observations that they are making. They have more of a sheltering in place behind thick-walled barricades that dissociates themselves from the culture that they should be penetrating. You may not agree with how our conservative friends dress themselves behind their thick-walled barricades, but our conservative friends, they would say, and I would agree, that it would be short-sighted to say what they are observing in the culture and among other Christians is wrong. Because some of our conservative legalistic friends overcorrect their clothing styles, they end up drawing attention away from sensuality while drawing attention to their countercultural attire. Though their intentions may be good, their clothing ends up distracting the culture from the gospel message. It is possible to draw attention to yourself by dressing in such a way that you become a hindrance to the gospel, an anomaly within the culture. Jesus did not dress weirdly out of step with his culture. He was a relevant guy who knew how to relate to his culture. Jesus did not dress counterculturally, and he did not dress immodestly. Jesus was not flashy or showy, and he did not dress in such a conservative fashion that his clothes were more of a talking point than his gospel. When someone spent time with Jesus, they said, "No man ever spoke like this man," rather than, "No one ever dressed like this man." There was nothing about Christ's appearance that distracted his audience from his message. He fit into his culture. He was not in the conservative or the liberal camp. As a matter of fact, he was outside the camp, as we read in Hebrews 13:13, walking in a way that drew attention to his message. There were times when people could not find Christ in the crowd because he looked like the crowd. I want to be more like Christ, where people are more aware of my character and my message than my clothing choices. Peter talked about this in 1 Peter 3. He said, "Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of the hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of clothing, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious." Sadly, my conservative and liberal Christian friends have their respective ditches where they hunker down while tossing grenades at the other side. My conservative friends, who have an unbiblical view of worldliness, and what I mean by that is that they would see worldliness as out there somewhere rather than in their hearts. Worldliness is in our hearts, and that's where lust is conceived. So they dress as opposite as possible from the culture because, again, they think worldliness is in the culture. It's not. It's in the heart. They have more of a Gnostic view of the culture, that is sinful, not recognizing that the heart is the one that's full of sin. But then my anti-conservative friends, who have an unbiblical view of modesty, they dress as opposite as possible from their conservative friends. For example, when you wear culottes to the beach or dresses to a ski slope, you're not making God's name great. You're not spreading His fame. You're not glorifying Him. I mean, that is analogous to the Corinthians speaking in tongues in a church meeting without an interpreter. It wasn't very clear to the non-Christian community of Paul's day what those weird people were doing in that church building other than impeding the message of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 14, he says, "If therefore the whole church comes together and all speak in tongues, and outsiders or unbelievers enter, will they not say that you're out of your minds?" Out-of-date or counterculture clothing choices do not, by and large, point unregenerate people to Christ. The cross of Christ is foolish enough. We don't need to place hurdles in front of the cross of Christ to confuse or distract or hinder our unregenerate friends from getting to the cross of Christ. Non-relevant attire becomes a cultural anomaly that may garner a few looks, But the quizzical onlooker typically dismisses the conservative person, or they marginalize them through mocking or devaluation. Either way, it's the clothes that gain the attention more than the magnification of Christ. Mocking conservative clothing choices is what happened to me before I became a Christian. I thought being a Christian meant I had to ride a bicycle, wear black slacks and shoes, with a white shirt and a black tie, and I assumed that I had to have a badge on my white shirt that said Elder Rick. Those were the first Christians that I saw, and I did not know that Mormons weren't Christians. To me, anybody that walked around with a Bible, they were Christians. I knew nothing about theology. I knew nothing about Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and these other groups. They carried a Bible. They talked about Jesus. I'm good with that. Those are Christians, but my goodness, do they dress weird. And I do not want to be a Mormon because I don't want to dress weird. Their clothes hindered the message of Christ. Now, I don't want to be like them for theological reasons, but that's not how I was thinking back then. It was their weird clothing choices, and that's the point that I'm making here. Their anti-culture dress standards made no sense to me. Their message got lost in their apparel. Now, in hindsight, yeah, you can make a point here that that was probably God's kindness to me. It was not a bad thing that their clothing choices turned me away from their message, because their message is outright heresy. In 1 Corinthians 8:9, Paul says, "But take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. Guard your heart so that your freedom in Christ is not a stumbling block to your weaker brothers and sisters in Christ who sincerely believe they are right on this issue of modesty." Too many of my non-conservative friends, that I'm calling liberal here, not in a pejorative sense, but they have overreacted to the legalism. Many of them, it's the legalism of their past. It's a part of their former manner of life. Many of them were part of the legalistic culture before seeing the light. Their overreaction and overcorrection is what I call the grace mistake. You will hear them talk about, "Oh, I live in grace. It's all about grace." And many times the word grace, and the reason I call it a grace mistake, is because it's a coded message. It means that I'm not a legalist. I can live any way that I want to live. And what happens is they come out of the legalistic ditch like being shot out of a cannon. And I apologize for mixing up my metaphors here. But they come out so fast and so hard that they overshoot the gospel and they land in the ditch of liberality. They become overly focused on the legalism that they came out of, which tempts some of them to react by going too far into either non-Christian liberality or sub-Christian liberality. And many of them is sub-biblical, not non-biblical. They misunderstand biblical freedom, going back to the term that I have here, the grace mistake, and they react to what they disdain. If we are more focused on what we're running from rather than what we're running to, we're going to run into a tree. And unfortunately, too many people are looking backward at what they came out of. You'll find children who later become parents doing the same thing. They're running so far from a bad parenting experience that they cross the road and land in the ditch, and they make similar mistakes, though different, but there's a commonality in the mistakes, but it's because they're reacting to something rather than running to something. By distancing yourself from the conservative past, they unwittingly yoke themselves to their culture. If you're in the liberal trap, I appeal to you to reconsider how you think about your legalistic friends. Love them. And while you're doing so, ensure that you're not distracting your unregenerate friends from the point and the purpose of the gospel. As I said earlier, I was one of those legalistic friends. I did not, as I also said, I couldn't distinguish between a Mormon and a Christian. They were all the same to me. And so my early Christian upbringing was within a legalistic religious environment. And though I left that many years ago and I'm not beholden to a lot of things that they teach, what they practice, even theologically, I differ now. But this one thing I know, that those people love God. Those people were sincere. I have nothing harsh to say toward my legalistic friends. I love them, and I'm very appreciative for the experience that I had with them. I could tell so many stories now, and I won't, about the good and the sincere times that we had worshiping God, loving each other, caring for each other, just pondering, just meditating on the goodness and the bigness and kindness of God. So many memories that are very fresh in my mind right now. They are sincere. And it saddens me to hear these liberated Christians, the non-conservative Christians, the way that they talk about their legalistic past and the legalistic community. No, they need to recalibrate their minds. They need to snap back into the middle space where they're not reacting to the legalistic culture and not jumping into the ditch of liberality. The culture needs to know Christ more than they need to know your coolness. Christianity is not supposed to be hip. The message of the cross is an anti-cultural message. In fact, it is anti-cultural as it can be. And as our culture continues to speed off into Marxism and progressivism and socialism and wokeism and all the other isms, the Christian message is becoming even more anti-cultural. Christianity is a death march. It is a call to die to yourself. You should have a countercultural heart condition, which should drive all of your choices. Paul, Peter, they were clear on how our calling to Christ should be counterintuitive to cultural norms. As you live out your coolness for the cause of Christ, my liberal friends, make sure you model something far superior to your culture, more so than your cultural relevance and your hipness. Our world needs to see the hope that we have in Christ. Paul said it this way in Philippians 1, verse 29, "For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in Him, but you should suffer for His sake." Peter said it this way in 1:21, "For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow His steps." It's not about our legalism. It's not about our liberality. It's about following Jesus. And that's a pneumatic thing as we walk in the Spirit. We are not rote creatures, and we should never dress the same. We should listen to our God and walk in His Spirit and learn from Him and ask Him to give us insight that we're not in either ditch of legalism or liberality. And because we can be blind to our blindness, we need to have a few good friends, at least one, that has the courage to be able to speak in our lives and to be able to see these things that I'm speaking of, should these things be apparent in any of our lives. Joseph was the sexiest slave in Egypt. He had no church. He had no Bible. He had no friends. He had no church clothes. And he had no help. But God was with him. And it was obvious to everybody. In one of the most isolated times in his life, he didn't look Christian. But everyone knew God was with him. How about you? How does your life communicate that God is with you? Do your clothes get in the way of the message of Christ? The Savior was a root out of dry ground, and there was no beauty that we should desire Him. Rather than getting a makeover, He stayed the course and went to His death. And even today, He is turning the world upside down. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? That's Jesus talking here. Is the main thing the gospel? The main thing in your life? Spreading God's fame is more important than what we wrap around our bodies. Do not err by your legalism or your liberality. Guard your heart. Love your God. Serve your neighbor. And send an unobstructed message to your world. I encourage you to dress in such a way that does not capture the gaze of any person. It matters not if you're male or female. Our Christian duty is to point people to Christ. We are signposts in the wilderness, like John the Baptist. They came to him and they asked him, "Are you the Christ?" "No, I am not him. He is the Christ. My job is to point to him." If your conservative clothing distracts from the message of Christ, consider changing your clothing style. If your culturally relevant clothing distracts from the message of Christ, consider changing your clothing style. Let me wrap up by asking you just a few questions here. I trust these call to action questions will be helpful, be instructive, and I would actually encourage you to share these with a friend. This could be a wonderful conversation to have among friends as iron sharpens iron. Question number one, have you overcorrected from one style to another? Have you jumped out of the legalistic ditch and you have run just as fast as you can run and you landed in the ditch of liberality? If so, how so? And what would be the right way for you to present the glory of Christ to your culture? What should you change if there is anything that you need to change? Do you know how to blend into your culture while communicating a countercultural message? That would be a wonderful discussion to have. You remember they went to Jesus and they could not find him. Actually, this was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and Judas had to betray him with a kiss. He wanted to make sure that they got the right one, but again, the implication seems to be clear that he looked like the rest of them. But there was something that was different about him once he started talking, but it was not the toga that he was wearing around his body. Question number three, when people see you, do they know that you are different? Not by what you wear, but because God is with you. The verse that I was referencing earlier about Joseph was Genesis 39:2. It's one of the most beautiful passages in the entire Old Testament. The passage says God was with Joseph. And the reason that's so important is because, well, it's Genesis 39, and the story of Joseph began in chapter 37, and it goes through 50. And so it's pretty much on the front end of his life as he's going down to Egypt in this horrific journey that he was on. And that's why it's so important to know that God was with him. And everybody knew it. He wasn't part of a church. He had no Bible. He had no church clothes. He had no friends. He was isolated. He was all by himself. But everybody knew that God was with him. There was something that was different about him. Thus, the question is, when people see you, do they know that you're different? Not because of what you wear, but because God is with you. You have a quality that draws people to Jesus. It is a gravitational pull that people experience when they are around you. Finally, question number four. The best dressed person looks like the fruit of the Spirit. And this would be an excellent exercise, by the way, if you were to read Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23. You know the passage well. Love, joy, peace, etc. Perhaps speaking with a friend as you lay out those nine elements of the fruit of the Spirit. That is a well-dressed person that looks like those things. That is what has that gravitational pull. That is what makes a difference. That is how we spread the fame of God. I trust that your conversation doesn't get into what I call the modesty wars, hyper grace versus legalism. By the way, that's the title of what I just shared with you. This is one chapter in my book, Sex, Temptation, and Modesty. You're welcome to have that book. It is free. It's in our store at lifeovercoffee.com. I wrote it for you. I wanted to share this chapter with you. I want you to have the complete book. So please go to lifeovercoffee.com, download it, and per usual, tell 1,000 of your closest friends that there's a free book in this store. By the way, there's a dozen of them. And so get the dozen. Get them all, but make sure you get this one on sex and temptation and modesty. Read and share this chapter and all the other ones as well. God bless.
Thanks for joining us. Learn more and get access to other resources at lifeovercoffee.com.